Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the demonstrations that took place in Moscow over the weekend against war with Ukraine and speak with Russian journalist and author Masha Gessen about the other Russia that is opposed to Putin, who is riding high in the polls. She is the author of the bestseller, The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin, and her latest book is Words Will Break Cement, The Passion of Pussy Riot. She also has an article in The Washington Post, Putin Wins in Russia Only by Escalating His War Rhetoric. Then we'll look into the political recriminations in Asia between a furious Chinese government and the authoritarian and apparently inept Malaysian government over the disappearance of a Beijing-bound Malaysian airliner with 239 people aboard, 153 of whom are Chinese, including a delegation of prominent artists. Michael Buehler, a professor of political science at Northern Illinois University, who has contributed to political risk evaluations for private sector companies operating across Southeast Asia, joins us to discuss the internal politics of Malaysia and bureaucratic infighting that may have led to unnecessary confusion and a week's delay in calling off a fruitless search in the wrong ocean. Then finally, we will speak with an aviation safety expert with the Transport Studies Group at Loughborough University in the UK, David Gleave, who will analyse the possible scenarios that might explain the actions of the plane after it was diverted from its scheduled flight path and where the Boeing 777 may have ended up, what may have happened to the passengers, as well as what may be the intentions of those behind involved in the plane's hijacking, whether suicide for insurance, theft for ransom, or a flying bomb for future use by a terrorist group. And joining us now is Masha Gessen, who's a Russian-American journalist and author of several books, most recently their national bestseller, The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin. She has contributed to Vanity Fair, The New Republic, Granta, and Slate, among other publications, and served as editor of the Russian-language magazine Snob and was fired as editor of Around the World for not covering Putin's stunt of flying with cranes. Her latest book just out is Words Will Break Cement, The Passion of Pussy Riot. And her latest article at The Washington Post is Putin Wins in Russia Only by Escalating His War Rhetoric. Welcome to Background Briefing, Masha Gessen.
Thank you. Great to be here again.
And the other Russia showed up over the weekend on Saturday. 50,000 people showed up in the streets of Moscow. The term the other Russia came from Mikhail Khodorkovsky, who spoke in Kiev recently at the Maidan. What was your sense then? I mean, the piece that you wrote in the Washington Post, I think, ends rather ominously, and I'm afraid I share your concern that Putin is intent on invading eastern Ukraine simply because he's changed the subject. The Sochi Olympics changed the subject, and now he's riding in the polls, and as long as people in Russia are feeling macho and about going to war and fighting the fascists again, they're not thinking about Putin's corruption.
Exactly right. And Putin faced a mass protest movement as he was coming into the office of president for the third time 2 years ago, and his ratings, his approval ratings, which fell as the protest movement began, never fully recovered until he invaded Ukraine. This was the mobilization effort that finally got the country excited again and got the country to back Putin again. Now, the problem with the with popularity that's won that way is that you have to keep escalating. And the other thing to understand that's very important is that once the Crimea joins the Russian Federation, which seems pretty much a done deed, the makeup of the Russian Federation will change, which, according to the Russian Constitution, necessitates a new presidential election. So Putin gets to renew his six-year term. But that means he's going to be campaigning for the next few months. And that means he needs to keep the war effort going. He needs to keep people excited about the war effort. That means he needs to keep escalating. He also will need to keep escalating in response to any economic sanctions that the West imposes. So all signs point to his having to do this. Now, As for the protesters, I'm very proud of the thousands of people who went into the streets of Moscow yesterday. According to the organizers, there were 70,000 people. According to the police, there were 3,000 people. According to the person counters at the metal detectors, as people entered the march, there were 23,000 people, which is probably roughly the correct number. That's a lot of people. In a country that is showing overwhelming support for the war effort, that's a lot of people. But the thing to understand about it is that this was a legal protest. This was the protest that happened according to the rules that are imposed by the Russian government. It happens in a cordoned off space where people are talking to themselves. But in exchange for agreeing to do it in this very strange format, they're basically guaranteed their safety. Putin will stop allowing these kinds of protests, I think, very, very soon, just as basically he has moved in and cracked down on the internet last week by shutting off access to the most popular opposition resources, something that hadn't happened in Russia before, something that people were afraid of for years, but something that only happened in connection with the war effort. So he allowed the steam valve to function for the weekend for people who lost access to the opposition news and commentary resources that they were used to go out into the streets to show their solidarity with Ukrainians, to say all the right things. And I very much doubt that this will happen again. And the sense in the crowd was also that this was the last time that people were going out into the streets, being able to say what they have to say and being able to see each other.
Well, of course, this manifestation of up to 70,000 people in the streets, the rest of the country didn't know about it, right? The Putin-controlled press, I imagine, didn't cover it at all.
State television didn't mention it at all. This is actually also a novelty. In the past, they would say that there was a protest march or a demonstration. They would downplay the numbers. They would say something offensive about the demonstrators. This time, they did nothing of the sort. It's like it never happened. So, yes, for 98% of the country, for the people who get their information from state-controlled television, nothing happened. This is something that also the rules of protest guarantee, right? People are talking to themselves. They're in this cordoned-off area. The entire route of the march was closed off, so there were police cordons all along the street. So it's not like you would, in a Western city, you would have accidental onlookers on the sidewalk seeing the march. Nothing of the sort. The only people who knew there was a march happening were the people who were participating in the march. And with the loss of the opposition news resources on the internet, other people wouldn't even have even been able to learn what happened or seen the pictures. So the only outlet for that are those kind of social networks. It's very much back to person-to-person connections.
Again, I'm speaking with Masha Gessen, who's a Russian-American journalist and author of several books, most recently the national bestseller, The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin. She served as editor of the Russian language magazine Snob and was fired as editor of Around the World for not covering Putin's stunt of flying with cranes. Her latest book just out is Words Will Break Cement, The Passion of Pussy Riot. And her latest article at the Washington Post is Putin Wins in Russia Only by Escalating His War Rhetoric. So just following through your scenario, Masha, as grim as it is, but I think it's very plausible. And it's very hard in covering this situation has been to separate the geopolitical from the personal, because Putin is the new czar. And I think Yanukovych fleeing the palace, I think really did affect him psychologically, because he's stolen so much more than Yanukovych has and has many more palaces than Yanukovych has. I talked to a Russian expert on the who's been advising the last three American presidents on Russia, Angela Stent, and she said she was with Putin when he learned of the fate of Gaddafi, and she said he was really personally freaked out by that hideous end for Gaddafi. So he can string this out for a long time. My understanding is, from Dr. Pavel Felgenhauer, an independent defense analyst, is that So the spring is not the best time for tanks to roll into Ukraine because they could sink in the mud up to their turrets. So is he likely to just sort of send these thugs across the border and destabilize the place and keep this thing fermenting for a while until the summer?
I think that's a pretty good those are two good points. One is, yes, absolutely, Putin sees in Ukraine more than any other country a reflection of Russia. So it plays into his general feeling that he's under threat. He's been feeling under threat since the protest movement started, and he feels like there are protesters in Ukraine who are American-inspired, just as he believes that of the Russian protesters, who succeeded in overthrowing a ruler that he identifies with. Right? So that contributes to his general feeling of being under siege and being surrounded by enemies. This is very much his politics. His politics is about communicating to Russia that Russia is a country under siege, surrounded by enemies, always having to fight, always having to mount a war effort in order to be able to stay stable. So it's a very organic feeding of his fears into sort of the national fears, and he's a very good reflection of the national psyche in this sense. Now, as far as how soon and how fast he's going to do it, the fact that spring is not the best time to send tanks into Ukraine does not mean that Putin is not going to send tanks into Ukraine. I mean, Putin is not known for acting in the smartest and most professional way, partly because the circle of decision makers is extremely small, extremely closed, and it is not apparent that he has somebody who is literate enough in matters of infantry warfare advising him and having the courage to tell him that now is not a good time to go in. So I wouldn't rule it out. But I think, yes, the scenario where he destabilizes Ukraine, where he keeps playing cat and mouse with the West and saying, you know, we're there, we're not there, I'm going in, I'm not going in, that can go on for a long time. He's going to watch for other opportunities to open up. He's going to do his best to sort of create situations where Russian intervention in one city or another is required, as happened with the murder of a protester, apparently pro-Russian protester, we don't know very much about this, in Donetsk the other day. An incident like this can be used as pretext for actually sending in Russian troops, or he can continue to send in thugs in unmarked uniforms to keep rocking the boat.
Well, Masha Gessen, I mean, I think the idea of pogroms against Russians in former Soviet states like the Baltics, where Russians had been there for decades and lost their citizenship, they lost homes and positions in the south, in the Kazakhstan and other areas when they became independent. It does resonate with Russians, doesn't it? I mean, he's dealing with a sense of loss, which apparently he feels very strongly, that the greatest geopolitical catastrophe was the end of the Soviet Union. That's apparently his geopolitical outlook. But that resonates with the Russian people, does it not?
Absolutely. I mean, that's what makes for effective propaganda, is a kernel of truth. Some of what Putin has told his people about Ukraine is true. There is some tension in some areas of Ukraine between ethnic Russians and Ukrainians, or more specifically between people whose dominant language is Ukrainian and people whose dominant language is Russian. There's in other post-Soviet states, not so much in Ukraine, but in other post-Soviet states, there have been significant problems with discrimination against Russian speakers in the population. There certainly is a radical right-wing nationalist element in the new coalition in Ukraine. Some of the protesters in Maidan were motivated by this. I mean, that's part of the Ukrainian phenomenon, is that Yanukovych, through his corruption and through his utter inability to listen to his people, managed to create a very diverse political coalition that included, among other people, this far right wing faction. So all of that is true. None of that is a valid reason to invade another country to use military force and to annex parts of another state. And this is something that is very much missing from the conversation in Russia. Rule of law as an idea, respect for international law as a concept, those things have been absent in Russian discourse for many, many years. So they don't even enter the conversation. It's a very, very basic conversation about, you know, having our brothers under attack in another country, so we have to go in and beat them up. It's the way you would talk about it in the schoolyard.
Well, Masha Gessen, it seems to me that, that you know, having John McCain stand next to the leader of Svoboda, the Freedom Party, the right-wing party in Ukraine that has a far greater representation in this new government than its polling and electoral numbers indicate. I don't know why on the Western side they don't repudiate these right-wingers and therefore take some of that ammunition away from Putin. But my understanding is, as Garry Kasparov, the chess master and dissident, says, that Putin's afraid of banks, not tanks. Why not, you know, I mean, they can extend the Magnitsky Act to Putin. And I don't understand why the West doesn't treat him like the thief and the gangster that he is. Because gangsters and criminals always crave respect, and we give him respect for free.
I can tell you why the West doesn't do it. I don't think it's a good reason, but I understand what the reason is. There's an idea that by pushing Putin further away, by treating him as the rogue actor that he is, the West would push him further in the direction of being a rogue actor. And this is true. I mean, the economic sanctions that actually work against Russia, and these aren't necessarily sanctions that would work personally against Putin, because Putin doesn't have that many assets in his own name, and he doesn't actually go west that much. Economic sanctions that would, you know, see Russia getting kicked off the London Stock Exchange, that see Russian businesses blocked from operations with U.S. currency, all of this is real and possible. This would really hit the Russian economy. What would that lead to? That would lead to greater mobilization. Russia has a mobilization economy as it is. Russia has been spending a lot of defense for the last several years at the expense of education, at the expense of social services. Now it has the perfect excuse to do so and to go further in that direction, and that's exactly what we're seeing happening. If economic sanctions hasten the slowdown of the Russian economy, that's what we're talking about, right? We're already seeing an economy that's slowing down. It can slow down faster under the impact of economic sanctions. That would mean greater mobilization of the Russian economy, and that would mean ratcheting up the war rhetoric. So in that sense, the argument that this will push Putin further in the direction of escalating his war effort and his war rhetoric is correct. I don't think that's a reason not to do it, because at this point, the West has no tools that would work strategically. Symbolic actions do not work. They open the West up to ridicule as far as Putin is concerned. The military response is not on the table. So all we're really talking about is economic sanctions. And the only argument against economic sanctions is that it would create a backlash. But anything the West does will create a backlash. So it's time to stop thinking strategically and start doing the right thing. The right thing to do is to treat Putin as the thug that he is and to make him into the pariah state that he deserves to be.
Well, Masha Gessen, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Masha Gessen, who's a Russian-American journalist and author of several books, most recently the national bestseller, The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin. She's contributed to Vanity Fair, The New Republic, Granta, and Slate, among other publications, and Masha has served as editor of the Russian-language magazine Snob and was fired as editor of Around the World for not covering Putin's stunt of flying with cranes. Her latest book just out is Words Will Break Cement, The Passion of Pussy Riot. And her latest article at the Washington Post is Putin Wins in Russia Only by Escalating His War Rhetoric. We're going to take a brief station break. We'll be back looking into the makeup of the Malaysian government, who appear to have messed up things, shall we say, over this disappearing jet.